You're listening to The Brand Compass, conversations to navigate your way to building a brand fit for purpose and poised for success. Here's your host, Shelley Rosland.
Hello there, my friend, and welcome back. Thank you for joining us today. If you are new to the show, I'm so pleased that you found me. And if you're a regular, you will already know that this is the place where we get into all the juicy topics that touch on the magical places where your brand meets the humans you serve. I'm Shelley, your host on this conversational journey, and today I'm welcoming back a previous guest, Jackie Goddard. Now, if you've been listening consistently with each new episode, you would have been with me on a little behind-the-scenes journey to delivering my first talk on stage at an event in April. I engaged Jackie to work with me to prepare the talk and to help me enjoy it at the same time. Now, in episode 33, Jackie came on the show and we talked a bit about the importance of physically standing in front of your audience and being brave enough to take up the opportunity to do more of it. Now that I've done my bit to do that, I thought I'd bring Jackie back on and then we'd have an open discussion with her about what it was like to have a speaking coach so that you can get some insight into the process and in particular, Jackie's process. Sit back and listen to this conversation, but I want you to listen to it from two angles. So the first is obviously getting the insight into what this actually looks like to do this work and what a speaking coach actually does. But also, I want you to listen with your own hat on and think, okay, so what's my process then? How do I lead my client through their challenge to get to the other side? So you're a fly in the wall now and you can get some sparks of ideas of how you can better articulate your magical genius and how to explain that better to others. Okay, so I'm going to reintroduce Jackie if you haven't listened before, and then we'll jump into the episode. Jackie Goddard is a speaking coach and trainer who helps business owners, leaders, and authors to gain confidence delivering paid talks to share their knowledge and leverage their authority in their space. She is on a mission to empower yearning speakers to get excited about sharing their ideas, stories, and life lessons. She teaches her clients how to craft engaging talks, use their voice and breath better, and sharpen their overall performance skills. Jackie's got over 25 years of experience working in and around the performing arts as an actor, director, producer, and teacher, facilitating acting and voice workshops as well. Jackie is mum to one daughter in university and lives in the beautiful part of the UK on the edge of the New Forest. That's a very long introduction, but welcome, Jackie.
Thank you.
So now I know we've been on your LinkedIn live show speaking about speaking, and we've dipped into bits and pieces, right? But I think in this conversation, what I want to do is get to that meaty hands-on bit that I think people don't really realize that you do, or people who do speaking coaching actually do. And then maybe we can use my talk as a working example just to help our listeners maybe understand the process a bit more. Does that sound good?
Yeah, certainly does.
So before we do that, Jackie, maybe give us an overall context of those high level steps that you kind of walk me and other clients through, and then we'll zoom in on the bit that we want to talk about today.
Step one, get it all out.
Yeah, exactly.
Get it all out of your head. So we kind of obviously discuss what the brief is, what you've been asked to do, the audience. Once we get all that out of the way, I just say before our first session together is get everything out of your head, put it onto a piece of paper, what everything that you want to say. And you can do that in bullet points. It doesn't need to be a full essay. But invariably, I'll get a 2,000-word essay back. and then that's not the talk by any means. So that is done. It's just to get it out of the client's head so that I get an idea of what it is that their voice is and how they want to speak and what they want to speak about. And then it's all about those big bits of paper, those big A1 sheets of paper that while the client is talking through what they've written, I put onto those pieces of paper the bits that I find interesting. I also do research before, obviously, I come to work with a client to find out what their background is, what I can find out about them, so that as an audience member, really, I can look at them objectively and just say, right, this is what I find interesting. So a combination of that, that's when it's the brainstorming part. And then it's then from that, with the stories and the ideas, we then put it into sort of a flow chart. So the journey you want to take your audience on, your introduction, the points you want to make, and the conclusion, and, you know, that powerful end point that you want to leave your audience going away thinking about. And once we've done all that, we hang the visuals onto those stories. And then right at the end, it's about the performance and about the practice. And that's when, I mean, as you know, we did all of the breathing and the warm-up exercises every time we met. But, you know, when it comes to performance and practice, it's more about the voice and the clarity and the organs of articulation.
Mm-hmm. The bit that in the beginning, I think it's worth people just knowing, is that bit in the beginning, you also ask them about any experiences they've had before. So for me, what was really nice for you as a coach is you were trying to get a lay of the land with who you were dealing with. So it's not just about what they want to say and what's their message and blah-de-blah-de-blah. What I liked is that you did that human temperature check in the beginning, though, just to understand where the person was actually, how they were feeling about standing up in front of an audience. Had they done it before? What didn't they like? What did they like? And I think it's important to mention that, because that, I feel like, is how you then temperature checked for them at the end.
Yeah.
Did we achieve what it was you wanted to achieve?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Because obviously lots of the people that I deal with mainly are the ones that are nervous or have had bad experiences before with speaking, which is generally why, if they have then been asked, as you were, to step on a stage, and you don't want to miss out on that opportunity, even though in a previous experience you had,
it didn't go well.
You weren't happy with how you felt about it, then that's when people kind of generally think, right, well, I do need help with this. And then, so that is my job, obviously, in the research that I do. It's all about finding out who it is that, I mean, for me, the client is the audience. So I, you know, when I talk to my clients, I say to them, it's always about the audience. Always find out who they are, how they feel, what they need. And that's exactly what I do when I start working with a client for myself.
And I think that also makes you a really good coach, because you ultimately, you probably don't realize you're doing it because you do it so naturally now, but you ultimately then adjust the pace at which you're going to do the things and what things or threads you'll pull on more than others, and dials and tweaks. But you do that naturally, so you almost won't even realize you're doing it. But it's worth people listening to know that it's not necessarily a cookie cutter approach. You've got a process and you know where you need to get to, but you know how to swim through that process in the best way for the client in front of you. So that's worth saying.
Thanks.
As well.
Yeah. As you say, I often don't even sort of think about that, but yeah.
You don't even realize it. No. Let's go back to my example of my talk. So once we established who the audience was, and obviously what the organizer, so in this case, it was Mark Masters of You Are the Media, what he was looking for from my particular slot and what the main message was that I wanted to get across, we then kind of jumped into, like you say, that first throw up version of everything coming out on paper, right? Do you want to describe what went on for you, like how you got me going in terms of pulling that content together? And then I could kind of chip in with what was going on for me. So I know you were talking a bit about the pieces of paper, but you actually have that little diagram that you shared with me with the different circles on that almost showed the pathway of where we were going to go. Do you want to describe that, and then I'll chip in as I came across my content?
I mean, as I say, it does start with that throw up, as you say. I love the way you say that, because it's the throw it all up onto a piece of paper.
Well, because it's not perfect, is it? You just gotta like just get it all out.
And that's exactly it. That's exactly what I'm after, is, you know, because whatever you put on that piece of paper, that in that process of throwing it all out there, is a starting point. It's not the talk, but it's a starting point. So from that bit of paper, I can see the points that you want to make. So that for the brief that you've been given, those are the points that I know you need to hit. So those can go on that flow chart that has, you know, the four circles, obviously the topics in the center, and then you've got the flow through the circle. So each circle will be one of those points that you need to hit, one of those objectives, one of those bullet points that are within your talk that the audience need to hear. That's the reason you're there. And then how do we land that message? And then how do we transition from that message into the next one, the next circle, and then into that next circle, and then into the next circle, and then out? So with those circles on that flow chart, we've got those points that are in that throw up piece. Then in between that, my job then, as you're talking to me and as you're reading through everything that you've written down, I can then, and with the research that I've done, I can then match as an outside ear, I can then think, okay, as an audience member, how would that land with me? What would be the best story to make me understand the point that you're trying to get across and make me visualize it, be engaged and be entertained? So that's when I can then start pulling on those stories. And how do you feel about this? I mean, a big part of this is about why people are doing what they're doing in the first place. There's a reason generally that we as business owners are running our own businesses. We're as entrepreneurs, even as leaders, as employees, even there's a core in us that keeps us going day to day, doing what we're doing. And that's the essence that I want to get out of the talk. That's the essence that I want to find in those stories, because that's what's going to make you relatable to the audience and make them resonate with the message.
This is what I found really, sorry to interrupt you there. This is what I found really challenging, because I hadn't had the stories yet in my head. So the initial bullet points of kind of what's the crux of the message I want to get across was kind of our overarching theme to what the talk was going to be. But I hadn't really mapped out each of those circles per se, because part of the reason for those circles was also taking the audience along a journey, like you said, and then linking the story so that at the end you got to the point that you were trying to make in the first place. And I think I found it really tricky to, because you would say to me, oh, okay, so you want to make this point. So like, when has this happened in your life where you learned that lesson or you came? And actually, because I haven't done this work, and this is the bit that really energized me afterwards to realize how important this personal brand work is, because you have to do this story digging, this narrative, and it's not just one story, it's multiple stories you have got to do. And then you'd have a buffet of these. I just didn't have a buffet. Yes, you got your memory, right? You got your memory to a degree. And luckily I have a photo album, so I could like, oh, go and find something to go, actually, well, this is actually one of the things that highlights one of the points. So I did find it challenging, but I found it incredibly useful. And then when I actually, once you'd done that, and I'd kind of identified a couple of stories, I was really nervous. So you'd identified, you know, the points that I needed to make, and this, you kind of gave me sections which matched or married with what your circles were. And I had to go away and prepare what I thought story-wise, because you said to me, it's got to be relatable, you've got to make it about you. So I can't tell other people's stories per se. They have to be mine. Let's go and do that. And then I prepared it. And because I'm a podcast show host, what did you say to me?
I said, it's a lovely podcast episode, Shelley. Not your talk.
And this, I wanted everybody to get that, because ultimately people think because you have a podcast show or you're doing videos, you're doing online stuff, they're like, of course you'll be great at talking and speaking on stage. It's a whole nother game, isn't it? It's the tone, the content, the storytelling. So once you got my first draft with all of my bits and pieces in, tell me then, you know, as I handed that over to you, yes, it was a podcast episode, but what went through your head though, going through that story and going through what I had.
At that point then, it's because obviously you are very used to and very good at podcast hosting, and what you write is very valuable, but we don't speak how we write. You know, we write a lot more formally than we actually speak. And so what, I mean, all the content that you had the content there when you came back with that draft, it was all there.
It was the tonality though, wasn't it? Some of the language.
It was the tonality. So it was then Shelleyfying it. It was then to find the moments that we could bring in some humour, or we could make it in your voice. So it was you on the stage connecting with the audience, making that human to human connection, rather than broadcasting through a camera for a podcast episode. So that's basically, that first draft was there. Everything we needed was there. We just needed to humanize it, just to give it that kind of that relatability to the audience. And that's when then the visuals come in, because then you can start, once you've got the stories, then you can add a visual, and then suddenly you've got this image behind you that kind of illustrates the point you want to make. But it's also an interesting point in your talk, whether it's, you know, something humorous or whatever it might be.
Yeah, and I think this was one of my challenges, right, was because like old school presenting, when you're doing networking or doing things to small groups and that, you'd use your slides as prompters to help you remember what you want to say. But it's almost the opposite with when you're on stage. Well, it should be, because a good speaker would be doing this, and I've seen multiple of them doing it, and now I have more admiration for them. But basically, I had to learn my talk by rote and then get comfortable about it. But then I also had to learn where I had to click my clicker, because it wasn't a matter of the image would come up before to prompt me. My image would almost come up as I'm saying it, or in the middle of me saying it. I found that really useful when I was practicing that with you, and we did my first run of images. You know, you would say, by sitting there observing, because you're watching lots of different things while I'm busy practicing it to you, you would go, no, you clicked that too soon. Or actually, it would be more powerful. Like, I had a picture of, who's the guy from Silence of the Lambs? I forgot.
Oh, Anthony Hopkins.
Anthony Hopkins, you know, behind the cage, because I was talking about attracting the wrong people. And that's kind of like the worst case scenario I could think of, the Silence of the Lambs. But, you know, and it wouldn't have had an impact if I put it up too soon or I put it up too late. Yeah. And I think that was really useful, getting that from you going, no, that actually landed really wrong. Yeah. You need to click it at the right time.
And that comes from obviously being a director and doing all that sort of acting stuff. It's putting to what my job is, to put together a performance, you know, and whether that's actually on stage or in a room somewhere, you know, it needs to be a performance, because there needs to be a reason for it. You know, the motivation to deliver a message or educate or whatever the reason for the talk is, but it needs to be an entity, you know, it needs to be a production.
I think what was also useful is when we pulled the right stories, because, you know, I had a bit of a confidence wobble on some of the stories, because I don't know if the listeners will resonate with this at all, but some stories are just like, oh, that's boring, man. Like, everybody has that happen in their lives. Or, geez, why should I share that? Because, like, who's going to be interested in that? But you were quite, I mean, give me your view on that. So I'm not going to speak for you. You tell me.
Trust me, Shelley.
I'm going to trust you to just, yeah, go. Yeah. It is
that thing of, you know, everybody, we all have stories. I have stories that I obviously kept buried for many years, because you lived them, you went through them and all of those things. And they weren't necessarily always the best moments in our lives, these stories that we have. But they are so unique to us that everybody might have been through something, but they won't have been through or learned the lessons that you did. So until you speak them out loud, you have no idea. Now, I say to people, the idea isn't to, you know, say, woe is me, look at, you know, haven't I had an awful time, and it's be self-indulgent in that way. It's to really find the stories that you have learned from and you've learned that lesson from, because then when you tell them to that audience, they can then go, oh my God, that did happen to me. That has happened to me. And actually, I didn't look at it in that way. You know, Shelley has taken this from this experience and made this of it. I could do that. And we live with our stories that we don't value them. We don't really value the learning and everything that is in the experiences that we have. You know, they are unique to us. They are unique as human beings, and we all experience things in different ways. So I think it's always valuable to put them out there, but make sure that there is a reason. There's your intention and the motivation is for the audience and not for yourself.
Definitely. I think that's what made it really nervous for me, like opening up and sharing some stuff that I haven't in a public forum or talked about in a public forum. And I knew for this event it would be the right thing to do because I trusted Mark and I trusted who the audience were. What I didn't trust is that anybody would find them interesting. So it was really amazing doing the talk and sharing some of those stories and then having people come and talk to me afterwards, and everybody got something different from the talk. So it wasn't even sometimes about the actual story itself. It might have been how I delivered it or how I then, you know, spun it through the storytelling that I was doing. So I'd say for anybody listening it's an experiment, you know. And I think until you've done a couple of these talks, you won't really know what lands and sticks, you know. And like you said, it might be just the way in which you're doing it, and it might be the way, but those stories do need to count for something. There's no point in telling stories that have no real context to the message that you're trying to deliver.
Yeah, I mean, it's harsh, but you just have to sort of say, what's the point, you know, and why should the audience care?
Yeah, why should we listen?
Yeah,
and why should we care? I think it would be useful for people to understand the structure of the kind of work that we did together. And I know you do tailor some of this depending on who's in front of you and what it is that you're trying to get through with them. So for us, just for the listeners' interest, is we broke things up, didn't we? So we did things over a period of time. So I was asked in September last year, and then I already approached Jackie and said, right, could we start? Did we start in January?
It was January, yeah.
So we started our work together in January and my talk was in April. So we then broke up our time, didn't we, between Zoom sessions, and we also met up in person as well.
Yeah.
Is that how you normally structure things? Like, talk me through how that works well from your side and from the client's side.
Yes, there's generally a mix of both. I mean, obviously, if I'm working with people that aren't in the country, then that makes it more difficult. Everything does have to be done on Zoom, and that's fine. But I do love to get into a room with people. There's nothing quite like it, really, being in a space with people. So if I do have that opportunity, like with you, where, you know, you're not sort of around the corner, you're sort of halfway up the country. But it was nice to be able to come up and spend an afternoon or a morning. I can't remember what we did, but it was a few hours.
Afternoon.
Whereas a Zoom call is a shorter amount of time. But certainly with the Zoom calls, we can do all of that brainstorming work. We can really just get it all out there, get the shape, get the content. And then if there's the opportunity to getting in a room with someone, then that's when, you know, you can have the slides up, you can stand up, I can get you doing the warm up and the breathing exercises and filling the room with your voice and all of that, which is slightly more, inhibiting. When you're actually at home, if you've got other people in the house and I'm asking you to do these voice warm-ups. It's a mix of both. And I do love, actually, and this goes back to, I used to take kids through Lambda exercise exams. I don't know if you know what that is. I used to do speaking verse and prose with kids from age sort of 7 through to 17. And I always, always, always would go with them to the exam because I wanted to be there not obviously I wasn't in the exam room with them, but to run through, just to take away some of those nerves before they stepped into the room. And, you know, I do that now with my clients if I can, as I did with you. I saw you the day before. And if you'd have wanted to go through it just before, I was obviously there in the room when you gave your talk. So it's that's, and even with a lady I've been working on who's not working on a talk, she engaged me. She works for an arts organisation and does lots of presentations in front of stakeholders and for funding and investors and all of that. Mm-hmm. So she just needed to go through the process of finding those stories. And so even though there wasn't an end result, there wasn't a talk that I was going to be present for, on our last session together, I asked her to get a couple of her colleagues to come into the room and she performed to them. So she got some feedback from them, which was fantastic. And it gave her the opportunity to, you know, obviously we all get nervous I get nervous if I stand up and have to deliver a speech or a talk. Yeah. But if you can do it out loud to somebody just for some constructive feedback, which I asked you, obviously, to speak out loud for your husband. But yeah, it's always good to, and I do like to be there if just before something's going to happen, just to get them over those nerves.
Yeah, I might just mention also how you gave advice around how to get that talk into my head as well, because it's very easy from a tonality perspective when you're learning things off by rote from a sheet of paper that you get really dependent on that piece of paper. And while you need that in the beginning, while you're just getting, you know, used to the stories and how one leads on to the other, I think the way you guided me on then learning that piece so that it just became natural to talk was really useful. And I try to be a really good student and just do exactly what you said and try and just trust the process, because part of it you said was, okay, record it onto an audio. And then when I go for a walk or something for 1 week, just do that every day and get. And that was actually that was really useful. And there was a point where you said, right, you're not allowed to look at the words anymore. You're not allowed to look at the paper. And I was like, oh, crap. And I did it and I stopped. And I just forced myself to then practice twice a day doing it. I was driving everybody a bit crazy. But that element of putting someone in the room was quite interesting, because I just clammed up, man. I clammed up. I was like, wow, this is... Thank God I did this, because I would be looking like really silly now. But so yes, Christian had to be in the room and then I practiced to the room. But it has actually helped, like you said, to actually have someone in the room, because I didn't realize that I was getting really comfortable talking to the pictures on the wall in my lounge until a face arrived.
Yes. And then you can hear somebody breathing in the corner. It's like suddenly all the words fall out of your head. And once you've done that, it's not so scary. When you do walk out in front of those, you know, the actual audience. Because, you know, people say, well, just practice in front of the mirror. You think, well, why? What's the point of that? You know,
it's actually hard. Made me feel worse. Yeah, I didn't actually like that. I think the other thing to also just note, like, everybody is different. So anybody listening, you know, you don't have to be shouty and you don't have to be, you know, a highly confident individual to do it, because you actually deal with a lot of mindset stuff while you're doing it. Again, it's very natural. It doesn't feel, you know, tough. But the other element to think about is finding that bit that is comfortable for you. So I have to laugh. So the example I'll give is, you know, when you said to me, like, what would be that song that would get you pumped up to come on stage? And I was like, don't know, because actually in my head I was fighting it, because I was like, well, no, I don't want to be riled up, because actually for me to get up there confidently, I actually needed to be calm and quiet and stay that way until I got onto stage. Even though Mark Masters does shout a very big introduction and rowdy up the troops to come on stage. But actually it was interesting, because I never would have known that until you'd asked the question.
Mm. Well, no, and thank you for giving me that feedback, because I kind of always assume that people have their walk-on music.
And like a Rocky Balboa.
You know, just generally the way you get on stage. So I mean, it might have been nice actually to find out what piece of music would have been helpful to you to get onto on stage. So that might be something I'll introduce to the to my program now is I could,
yeah,
I
maybe say,
you know, 70s rock ballad or whatever is general usually what comes up, but actually
full columns.
Perhaps there's something a little more sedate.
Yeah, or, you know, because I played with the metaphor of playgrounds in my talk. So maybe it would even have been something that was quite playful and joyful, almost like childlike.
Yes.
Maybe that would have sung to my heart more than a, you know, a big rowdy Bon Jovi living on a prayer. Oh, honestly, Jackie, I don't think I would have been able to do the talk without you. And I have to say, even for listeners, this, for me, this wouldn't be a once-off. So if I was ever asked again, you know, I would still want to go through the process. So what I would say to people listening is this isn't just a one-off and you're done, because now I'm comfortable what the process is. I think I could still do with that objective eye. You know, the ones going, yeah, I'm not sure that picture quite hits the spot. And I think you need a bit more. Take out that story, because actually that doesn't make any sense now that you've gotten to. It was really useful to have that objective eye, but objective with coming from a space of wanting to make it better and wanting me to do well. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, as I said to you earlier, 70% of the work that I do is around is being that objective eye. And there's obviously something in me, which was nice, actually, as I was sort of going through and thinking about what we would be talking about, was when I'm working at home and I've got you guys on Zoom, I don't know if I showed you, you're on my, I've put a garden table on my coffee table and the laptop sits on that and points at the wall. And then the big bits of paper are on the wall. So while I'm writing out and listening to you behind me, in my head are these, it kind of, again, I suppose it's the director of putting a show together. There's images and words and stories. And I'm quite quiet as I'm doing that. I'm just writing, but It's all playing out.
Yeah,
I'm playing out your talk in my head, how it would sound to an audience. And that's when I kind of go, oh, I like that. Oh, no, that sounds good. And so as I write down, I write down what me as an audience member would take away. So it's not necessarily what you're saying, but it's the essence of what I think would make sort of interesting talk.
Yes. Definitely. Thank you for being you, Jackie.
You're welcome. Thank you for being you, Shelley.
Now, for anyone listening today who's really curious and they want to chat to you about maybe helping them with a talk and their ears are all pricked up and they're curious, like, how can they get in touch with you?
Well, LinkedIn is kind of where I live. So LinkedIn's always a good place to come and find me, Jackie Goddard, Power to Speak on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. I do have Instagram. I think it's Power to Speak 9. But I'm, you know, LinkedIn is where I sort of walk and talk.
Play more.
Yeah. I do a live speaking about speaking, which you've been on the podcast, which is on tomorrow. And I've got the lovely Rebecca Leppard coming on to talk to me tomorrow.
Very nice. So those are Tuesdays at 4 o'clock.
Tuesdays at 4 o'clock. And the website is powertospeak.co.uk. And all my services and the blogs and
things that I do,
everything's on there. Lovely. I do also have a free download that I've just done. So perhaps I'll give you the link to that and people can...
Yeah, give me a link to that.
I'll Speak with Confidence 101. So that's just sort of a handout with the basics if anyone needs to just know what the three B's are. The believe,
nice.
Breathe and be prepared.
Ooh. Like it. Right. Thank you so much for joining me today and being willing to walk through our work together live in this episode. You're just so easy to work with, Jackie, because you've got this wonderful mix of gentle, graceful genius, but also quite tenaciously persistent, as I say, in moving people through the steps that they basically need to work on to get to the end. And I feel like you are quite empathetic as a coach as well, because you plan the next steps on how deep or light you go, depending on who's in front of you. And at least that was from my experience, because you had the perfect tempo for me while I was still trying to balance being perimenopausal mom of a teenager and also a busy business owner as well. So thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. It's great to hear. It's lovely to hear. Thank you.
And that's it for this episode today, folks. Thank you so much for joining us. How was that? Can you see that preparing your message and being intentional about what you're going to deliver to an audience has a lot of value? I have to admit to being quite nervous or precious about doing right by anyone who's asked me to do work for them. So it's a responsibility mantle that I don't take lightly if somebody asks me to come and do a talk or speak to their audience. Having a specialist who could actually short code what I needed to focus on and where to spend my energy and get me going in the right direction from the get-go was just invaluable. Plus, I got to fulfill my responsibility to the event organizer to do a good job for the audience at his event. Now, remember at the start of the episode, I said to you, you need to listen to it from two angles. So one, how it was for me working with a speaking coach, but also for you to listen from your standpoint as a subject matter expert and how you take your client from zero to hero and solve their particular challenge. So Jackie is a subject matter expert in her arena of speaking and acting coaching, and she shines really brightly when she's doing what she's great at. She's a superb example of someone who continues to hone her craft and is systemizing her genius so she can keep repeating the results she knows she can achieve for her clients. Who do you know who could do with listening to Jackie's insights and our discussion today? Share it with them. You know you want to. Until next time, my friends, stay strong, believe you have value, and make good brand decisions.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Compass. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to share it with your entrepreneurial friends and help them make good brand decisions. Until next time, let's keep the conversation going at shellyrosland.com.